So Wally, you're choosing option two. You're going to stick with the pattern for runway 34 and not quite at the last minute, but pretty close to it, break off and land runway 29. And everyone at the table agrees with you. But I'm curious, is this something you've done before? So you looked at this situation and it was a no-brainer. Is it something you think you would have been presented with and, oh, of course I would do that without really thinking about it? Or was this something with some reflection and there was an aha moment of, wait, there's an out-of-the-box answer here that solves this? Which was it? How did that come about?
I think it was a combination of all of those factors. I recently had an opportunity to do this very thing. I was making an approach to runway 27. As I got fairly short final, I could see the windsock clearly favored runway 22 much better, and it was a strong crosswind for 27. So I simply made the switch and landed on 22. In fact, I made the same announcement that we talked about here. I just said, landing 22. And so I had, just coincidentally, I'd recently done it. So when I read this, I thought it looked like a pretty good solution to me.
I'm going to take a poll around the table here, and I want you to be honest. How many people thought of two reading the initial scenario when it presented to you? And how many people went, oh yeah, two, of course, when you heard Wally's response? In other words, would number two have occurred to you honestly on your own? How many people yes? Three. How many people no? Two. I really appreciate your honesty, Catherine and John. Because I have to be honest, would I have thought of that, or would I have just gone with the flow and made the attempt because it didn't occur to me to think outside the box? John, you were the first one who said to me, wow, I go too, but only because Wally thought of it. So tell me, what would you think you would have done and how would you have done it if Wally wasn't riding on board with you?
Okay, so the first thing, I think you have to back up and look at this in terms of the pilot experience in the scenario. You know, it's a 250-hour pilot with what, like relatively limited tailwheel time. And it's kind of hard for us now to put ourselves in that seat, but that would give me a lot of error on the side of caution in this situation. So I like Wally's idea, and I thought of that. This one thing I did think of is overfly the field and look at the windsock and look at the traffic pattern. You're just relying on the ASOS or AWOS wind, or, you know, which could be very, very different looking at the windsocks. So that would help some. If I didn't like what I saw, I'd probably take five and go to the other airport. But given Wally's creative choice there, I was like, that's not a bad idea. It might be worth a try.
Catherine, similar situation. If you were approaching this airport, you would have taken the overflight probably. And then what would you have done if you didn't have Wally riding on board with you?
Yeah.
How would you have handled it?
I would have overflown the airport, and I'm putting myself in this pilot's position. This is an airplane that is maybe not as forgiving as other tail aircraft, and this pilot has limited experience in the aircraft. So were I in that situation, I'd overfly the airport. And if it didn't look good, I'd probably divert to another airport. But in reviewing all of these options, I ended up really liking two. I tried to make the others fit, but none of the others are safe except diverting. I like the idea of tucking in at the last minute to runway 29. I didn't see a problem with that. So I thought that was a great idea.
I like what you pointed out, John, about on the overflight, actually taking a look at the windsock to see if this kind of creative thinking was even necessary, because boy, wouldn't it be embarrassing to pull this maneuver off only to have created a crosswind for yourself from the right, because actually, yeah, those other pilots, they were right. The wind was favoring 3-4 once you got down by the approach end of 3-4.
Right, with the local flow around hangars and stuff like that. Yeah.
Especially maybe even if it was shifting around. In fact, let me put it out there. If it was kind of shifting around, would anybody be like, yeah, let me actually stick with 3-4 and give it a try rather than going for 2-9. I think I'm seeing nods here, Wally.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, if it was shifting around, I guess you might be hopeful that it would shift in your favor as you came across the threshold. And of course, it may shift to your disadvantage as well. But chances are more likely to give it a try under those circumstances.
Elaine?
And there's nothing wrong, obviously, with reserving the option for a go-around or even purposely doing an overflight down the runway to see, is this going to work with the crosswind I have currently, knowing that if you come around again, if it shifts, you can certainly abort and try the other plan.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Now, I do have one question for you, Wally, about the specific way you're going to execute this. You are entering the pattern for 3-4 and telling everybody that you're in the pattern for 3-4, and you're not revealing your plan until final on 3-4, that you're heading over to 2-9.
Correct.
Why is that? What's the disadvantage of just letting people know throughout, you know, I'm left downwind for runway 3-4, planning to land runway 2-9. I'm based for 3-4, planning to break off for 2-9. Why not?
TAF frequency is going to really be busy with all these airplanes here. And I think that's just added chatter that, frankly, I mean, I've made the decision I'm going to land on 2-9. It's my responsibility to make sure 2-9 stays clear, but probably talking about it on the radio isn't going to help much. When I get on final, now I'm approaching, and I think that might be useful information, but saying it on downwind I don't think would communicate to most of those pilots.
John?
Yeah, I disagree with that. I think you need to, at some point before the final, let people know, because it could be somebody following you and they say, where the heck's this guy going? And maybe a student following you and follow you around to the wrong runway or something like that. The other thing would be if there's any ground traffic, if somebody's crossing 2-9, they would want to have a heads up because they think they're crossing 2-9 because there's no active runway at a non-towered airport, but it's not the active. And I do agree with you on the CTAF chatter can be hard. You have to figure out a way to do it concisely, but get the message across that you're going to be doing something non-standard.
I agree. Certainly there's a hazard of people crossing runways and those kind of things. And if I choose to do this, it becomes my responsibility to be double sure that runway is going to be clear. And if there is a conflict, I need to go around. That's all.
Bob.
I agree with Wally on this relative to the chatter. It's likely that the CTAF frequency is busy, and certainly someone's going to come back and ask, oh, what is it you're doing? And it just confuses the whole issue. Nobody needs to know at this point. He's in the pattern. Coming down final, that's the time to make the announcement. You're diverting over to 2-9. And, of course, you can see it pretty clearly at that point as to whether anybody's attempting to cross or whether there's any traffic on that runway. So I'm with Wally on that. Keep your mouth shut.
There's also another non-standard item here, which is this last-minute low-altitude break, if you will. So let's walk through the procedure on this. This pilot presumably has never done this before. The threshold of 2-9 and the threshold of 3-4 are quite close together. Where does this pilot, if you were recommending it to them, maybe they're overhead the airport, Wally, and they called you on speed dial, where does this pilot break to go over to 2-9? Because if they're heading for brick 1 or even a reasonable, just a bit down the runway aiming point that they might normally use, that's a very low altitude turn. It's only 45 degrees, but it's a low altitude turn. And out of the final stabilized approach that we like to tell people about. Catherine.
Yeah, in fact, if I were tucking over to the other runway, I'd actually maybe bow out a little bit to the right in order for me to have a more available runway on 2-9. So I think that makes it even more important to go ahead and announce ahead of time what I'm doing.
So there'd be gliders over there where you just bowed out to. Are you concerned about the glider pattern that you would have to duck out to the right into coming back for 2-9?
Yeah, it wouldn't be much. I don't think it would affect the gliders.
Bob?
I agree. Bow out a little bit and it would become a more continuous turn to final on 2-9. I don't see a problem there. The runway's 3,400 feet.
Wally.
This is a relatively slow airplane on final as well, and a very maneuverable airplane. And the POH says the approach speed is, I think, 65 to 70 miles per hour. It's not a Baron coming in at 110 or something, so it would be doable.
I don't think you really need to duck out that far, too far to the right. You got 3,500 feet, and like Wally said, you're slow. You're probably down about, when you do this, you're down 300, 400 feet AGL, something like that anyhow. So shouldn't be too hard to make that turn and plop in.
Mark.
I think the issue is, when do you make that call? And, you know, I might very well make that call just as I'm turning base and just continue that bear's turn and just limit it so that I'm now lined up with runway 29.
So it's a reasonably long runway in a relatively slow airplane. How many people think about using the second half of this runway in your 140? Or is that throwing away a good runway for no reason? Catherine.
I think the key here is this pilot is very new to this airplane. So I think planning to use as much of the runway as possible is key.
Mark and Wally both nodding on that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. General agreement around that. Is there a good time and a good argument for intentionally using the second half of a runway like this? This airplane can land in far smaller places than this sort of thing. I mean, we're talking about a 140 here.
A situation where that would possibly be considered is if you are experienced and comfortable in your airplane and you are facing something like a 20-25 knot headwind, where that could really shorten the landing rollout, slow down your ground speed quite a bit, where depending on the total length of the runway, you could consider cutting that in half for any given unusual situation. Of course, something that would be non-standard.
Bob.
I'm opposed to giving up good runway, flying over good runway. So, no, I would not intend to land on the second half of the runway, for instance.
Wally.
The pilot owns the whole runway, and they can use it sort of how they choose. But if you choose to land long and now happen to run off the end, you're going to have a difficult time explaining that. And that's happened more than once.
So I'm going to ask Mark at the table here, our aviation lawyer, is this legit? Is this legal? Can you just kind of make up your own pattern, if you will, at the airport? You're flying a standard pattern and then you're ducking off to the side runway. Obviously, if nothing goes wrong, nobody's going to know. But in retrospect, if somebody complained because they said, this guy, he broke off to the side runway and he didn't announce it till short final, and I was thinking about crossing it and I filed a NASA report. Is there potential for this coming back to bite you, and what kind of ground do you stand on?
I think you're fine. You're still in left traffic. You're still flying a left pattern. You're just making that change over. I would think it'd be a very strange FISDO inspector who wouldn't just look at this and say, oh, you've got to be kidding. And they actually have cases where they go, oh, you've got to be kidding. So I think this is a really non-event. And by the way, I've done this at a towered airport.
With permission from the tower.
With permission from the tower, yeah. It was at Centennial, which is dual parallel north-south runways and then a crosswind east-west runway. I was in a 152, and the winds were howling crosswind from the east. I did one go-around because of it, and actually the tower offered, do you want to land on 10? Which they never offer over there. And it was basically fly down runway 17 and then just bank left and make that turn and land.
How much does the airplane matter here? We make it easy because it's a tail dragger, but if this pilot is just kind of uncomfortable with crosswinds or what the crosswind is that day, they're not in a 140, they're in a 150. They're a student coming back from a solo. Is this an appropriate kind of thing for a low-time pilot to do, maybe when it's a perfectly average sort of airplane?
I don't see any difference myself. Same logic applies here.
Well, let me push the envelope a little further here. Let's suppose that the situation was you wanted to land 29 because your taxi is shorter, especially with all these other airports, because your hangar's over by 29. Winds are actually blowing right down runway 34. You're comfortable with crosswinds. Is that like a legitimate use of this kind of like dogleg off on the pattern, something non-standard just for your convenience? And then what would happen in that case? You accept the crosswind, you ground loop, and you have to explain it. And they're saying, wait, you did what? You did a low altitude turn? Bob.
I think the regulation that governs the pattern says that if you're making turns, you make them to the left. And that's what this pilot is doing. He's making a turn to the left. So I don't see any problem there. And this is not without precedent. There's a sidestep maneuver that's frequently used where you have parallel runways. And you're making an approach to one runway and you break it off and go to another runway.
So if you do this kind of thing, make sure it's a left turn to the other runway, not a right turn to the runway. That's you can't do that. Wally.
I think I can justify the sidestep maneuver to avoid a crosswind for me. That's a pilot in command decision. I don't think I could justify, if an incident occurred, saying I'm doing this because it's more convenient for me. That's my view.
I don't think there's a regulatory issue. I think the only thing is if you take a look at the recent AC, and I think it's just a couple of years old, on non-towered airports, the overriding consideration, and this applies to IFR as well as VFR, the overriding consideration is not to interfere with the existing pattern that's actually being used by other aircraft. And in this case, we're not. Whether the reason is I don't want the crosswind or it's more convenient, as long as you're not interfering with the pattern, you're fine from a regulatory standpoint. If you screw up the landing, you may be looking at a 709 as to why you screwed up the landing, but that's not really a regulatory issue. I think the issue in here that people have trouble with is that you're just doing something different. And, you know, it's something unusual, it's something non-standard, and it happens all the time. And, you know, John, you made the point that you didn't think of this. And I did a checkout in a 172, a rental checkout for a retired airline pilot with 20 gazillion flight hours. And we were coming in and the winds were coming in from the west and we were landing north-south. And he said, well, you're going to have to help me with this crosswind landing. And I said, why don't you ask the tower for the other runway? And he looked at me with something that would never have ever crossed his mind.
Now, I just want to circle back to people were talking earlier about the non-standard pattern for the convenience. You know, would you land on 29 if it was closer to your hangar? I mean, if you've ever been to any airport where there's jump planes, they will land downwind. They will land on any runway to get closer. And, you know, in this airport, the jump plane would land on 1-1 if it was closest to the drop zone to pick up the next load. So I would say that's more or less a common practice in a non-towered airport.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense to me, John. And I like what Mark said earlier about you have to make sure you don't interfere. And I would say, adding Wally's comment about when to make this call, you don't want to interfere or confuse. But there is nothing inherently wrong with a creative solution as long as you can check some boxes. Is this legit within the rules? Yes. Okay, I can consider it. No. Hey, that's just out. Am I going to confuse, interfere, or possibly cause risk to other people at the airport? Well, if there's a yes, then I can't do this. If no, I can do this and slot in without any kind of extra confusion or risk, then that seems pretty reasonable. And knowing that you're always on the hook if something goes wrong, no matter what runway you're landing. But if you've thought all this through, if you took the time to overfly the airport, you checked the scene, you made sure it was necessary, this is something you can do, something you can ask for, and something people can take away from this discussion, keep in their back pocket for the day when they might need it, and they don't have Wally on board in the airplane.